John Houghton is a senior attorney in Pacific Legal Foundation's property rights practice. He focuses primarily on regulatory taking cases. He joined PLF in 2022. Before that, he spent 17 years as a partner in his own firm, defending the rights of property owners in New York against eminent domain. Bucking the trend, he won numerous Penn Central cases at trial and on appeal. I just heard they're redoing Penn Central Station. I don't think it's the same thing. He's been designated as a counselor of real estate, joining an invitation-only organization of real estate practitioners, recognized for their expertise, experience, ethics. That's a lot of ease. Over the last month, he argued an appeal in the Ninth Circuit. He also argued an appeal in the Sixth Circuit. He's midway through writing a Supreme Court petition. And after that, he'll have a second Supreme Court petition to argue. And he's here today to argue with me. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, John Houghton.
Thank you, Mark. And thanks for having me on. I always look forward to it, and I'm always happy to talk to you.
I appreciate it. But I had to remember how to pronounce your name, not to be confused with Charles Lawton. You're Houghton.
I am Houghton. But over the years, it has been Houghton, it has been Houghton, and many other iterations of that going back to high school that I probably don't want to relive by putting them out here.
Well, it's funny you should say that because we have your high school principal on the other line. So I love taking cases. Last time you were on, we talked about eviction bans and COVID rules. That was a while ago. And recently, but primarily you're here today to talk about rent control. And you have some information about the city of Santa Barbara rent freeze that went into effect and the subsequent lawsuit that was filed by a local attorney. And so I want to hear from you about rent control in general, but should we start with what you know about the city of Santa Barbara lawsuit, or I should say the Rental Property Association lawsuit against the city of Santa Barbara, and why? I heard that Pacific Legal Foundation might be involved, but why you're not involved at this point?
Sure, I'm happy to. Rent control, I think, is an extraordinarily difficult issue, and it's always something that puts property owners in a bad position where they feel like there's really nothing that they can do about it and nothing that they can do to fix it. Because the courts at this point, particularly in California, are so tremendously pro-tenant and equally tremendously pro-property owner. So
you mean anti-property owner?
I'm sorry, yes, anti-property owner. Thank you.
It would
you.
Be nice if they were pro for each category.
Wouldn't it though? I mean, you know, if only we could have a world where property rights would be treated in an even-handed way. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So I certainly applaud the Santa Barbara Association for their lawsuit and for trying to fight the good fight for these property owners who are continuously stuck in terrible positions by the government.
And just to, you know, play the other side of the coin, you know, tenants are everybody's prices have gone up. I mean, property owners' prices have gone up. Tenants have gone up for everything, but everything's paying for more. We had runaway inflation, COVID, like we never saw before. So I understand, you know, tenants want to say, hey, you know, is there something someone can do? And you know what I'm saying? So is there some balance or what can be balanced?
You know, I absolutely understand the position tenants are in. It's difficult for them too. It's hard all the way around. When things become more expensive, you know, gas is more expensive, inflation is up, interest rates are up, the cost of groceries are up. I get it. The issue is who should be paying for that? And if someone's going to help, who's responsible for helping? And the problem with rent control is that, if the government wants to help, it's wonderful that they do, but they need to be the ones to pay for it. And essentially, what happens is instead of the government providing any type of financial assistance for renters, they essentially say to these property owners, to these landlords, you have to shoulder the cost on your own. And the problem is for these for landlords and property owners is that all the costs are going up for them too. They have mortgages and they have to pay property taxes and they have to pay for utilities and electric and maintenance on the building. And most of these owners are not large corporations with bucketfuls of money. They're mom and pops who are just sort of scraping by. And what happens is when rent is artificially stuck at a number that's below market, then for these property owners, the expenses are now more than their income. And they can't afford to fix up the property. They can't afford to pay their real estate taxes. They can't afford to pay their mortgages. And everybody suffers. So that's the problem with it is that certainly, I understand where tenants are coming from, but the government is forcing the cost on someone who's not able to pay it when really the government should be the one paying it.
That right. That's the interesting part. Who should help out in this situation? My guest today is John Houghton, a senior attorney in Pacific Legal Foundation's property rights practice, and he does focus on taking cases, regulatory taking cases. Now you mentioned the government. There's some programs out there. I'm not an expert. Is it Section 8 that comes to mind?
Yes, Section 8's a federal government program, and it essentially for individuals who need assistance, who need some financial assistance, in sum and substance, the government will pay for some or all of the rent. And what it does is it helps people who need helping. It doesn't task property owners. And by and large, most property owners who have Section 8 housing love it because there's assurances that they're going to get paid. There's that guaranteed, rental income that's coming from the government, which is actually more of a sure thing than income coming from a tenant. Because it's going to be 100% payment all the time, as opposed to, tenants may be late, they may need a month here, a month there. That's normal and understandable. But when it's the government, it's guaranteed. So property owners love it. Tenants are able to afford the places that they live in, and everybody wins.
I will say, and again, I'm not an expert on Section 8, but I remember over the years, I remember I had a client years ago. He owns 60 different rental units throughout Santa Barbara, and he told me he loves Section 8. He said he
Yeah.
got more rent for those units than his market rate regular tenants. On the other hand, I remember years ago seeing ads and landlords would say no Section 8. For some reason, some people didn't want a Section 8 tenant, like there was something wrong with them. And so I think hopefully that's evolved and I can see the advantages and I'm glad you're a proponent of it. And you also mentioned that that's federal, and it made me wonder if California or other states have a program similar to Section 8 to help tenants.
Not that I know of, no.
Oh God.
I
That
mean,
was a
I would love it if they did, particularly in California, where the cost of housing is so acute, and so challenging and so limited for everybody involved. I think that it would be a fantastic thing, but Instead, what you see in California, and this is something that has popped up in the recent Santa Barbara lawsuit that you mentioned, is that municipalities are just making life more and more difficult for property owners and landlords, which only is decreasing the availability of affordable housing and decreasing the availability of housing overall. So I wish that they would.
It's very difficult. Certainly, let me, before I talk about some options, am I correct that the Santa Barbara Rental Property Association lawsuit against the city of Santa Barbara is against specifically the rent freeze because the city of Santa Barbara has yet to come up with a specific rent control program with parameters? Is that right?
Yes, that's it. It's a lawsuit right now. It's a temporary rent freeze, and it's my understanding that that's going to be in place until December, unless of course they decide they're going to extend it. So that's what it's directed at for now. And maybe Santa Barbara will make it permanent. Maybe they will do something else. It kind of remains to be seen.
And
But until then,
is that
yeah.
what you're waiting for to see what happens? Because you have the Pacific Legal Foundation, maybe you personally have been what's, is it called, a friend of the court, amicus? What is that?
Yes, it's an amicus. It's basically it's it it does translate into friend of the court, and essentially it means we are saying, hey, we have something important to say, and we would like you to listen to it, and we would like you to consider it
And
in making your
the
decision.
Pacific Legal Foundation, is it amicus curia?
Yes.
Yeah. In exchanging emails with the marketing person with the PLF, as if I would know, she refers to it as AC. So, amicus
Yes,
curia, friend
yeah.
of the court, or FOC, friend of the court. Oh, that's not right. FOTC. You have taken cases like that. Why haven't you taken Santa Barbara's case?
It's honestly just a matter of resources. PLF, we are mighty, but we are also small. And for the work that we do, we try to impact property rights and make real substantive change for the better, to make property rights essentially whole again and protect property owners through the Fifth Amendment. But our people are not unlimited, our resources are not unlimited. And, although I wish it were otherwise, we just don't have the resources to take on every single issue in every single jurisdiction across the nation.
And what would have to
So,
happen in this case in order for you to potentially get involved?
well, I think what we're going to look at is see what happens with respect to the district court's decision. Because we do have limited resources, generally, we do not get involved until cases reach the appellate court or until cases are ready for the Supreme Court. Because really, the Supreme Court is where you can make meaningful, lasting change, not just for specific individuals, but for all property owners across the country. So,
Makes sense.
with any luck, the Santa Barbara Association will win, and maybe we won't need to be involved at all. That would be the absolute best case scenario, and I'm certainly hopeful that they do.
My
But
guess.
if not, we'll take a look and we'll see what the judge does and see where it goes from there.
Thank you. My guest, John Houghton, Senior Attorney in Pacific Legal Foundation's Property Rights Practice. So one answer, and of course I know that I speak to property management companies, and it's got everyone scared who is living landlords who own in Santa Barbara County and in the city of Carpinteria, the city of Goleta. So all these old-time landlords that might have had mom and pops that might have owned it for a long time and had below market rents are now scrambling to catch up. Because they're afraid if a rent freeze came now and their hundreds and hundreds of dollars under market rent, they'll never catch up. So it's kind of having a negative effect. One answer to avoid the need for rent control was put forth by a UCSB economic forecast director, Peter Rupert, and he argued that Santa Barbara rent freeze will not bring down rents. It will bring down rents for some people in a certain situation, and then they'll never want to move. So then people who want a cheap rent won't get that because those people will never move. So he's suggesting it would do the opposite, and he suggested doing what Austin, Texas has done, where you can get a building permit in 22 days versus challenging the California building permit gauntlet. Have you seen that type of approach work better than rent control?
Tremendously better, tremendously better. What happens with rent control is that, and I would include rent freezes in this too, is that it always has the exact opposite result of what they want it to be. And I think that not just the economist you'd mentioned, but many economists across a broad spectrum for years and years and years have been saying the exact same thing. What happens with rent control is when rent is artificially suppressed and kept below market, and oftentimes purposely below inflation, property owners, as I mentioned before, can't afford to maintain the property. They can't, they don't have the income to pay for their mortgage or to pay for taxes or expenses or maintenance or any of that type of stuff. And the result of that, I mean, there are many results from that, and all of them are negative. Some results are that oftentimes rent control buildings are in poorer condition than market rate conditions because the property owners do not have the income to fix the buildings because the government is artificially keeping the income too low. Another impact is that no one wants to own these buildings anymore, and no one wants to build these buildings anymore.
Although,
If you,
let me interrupt. I think newer buildings, and what's excluded is buildings built in the last 15 years. But of course, if it was built 14 years ago, next to 2 years it'll be 16 years old, and then it will. So the future is a little tainted there.
It is, and there's also it overhangs everything, particularly in places like California, where it seems like one day, sooner rather than later, a rent control regulation is going to be knocking on your door. Because in addition to the fact that property owners under the thumb of rent control, are going to be, leaving the industry or want to leave the industry because, I'm just making up numbers, but their annual expenses are going to be $400,000 a year, and their annual income is going to be restricted to $250,000 a year, and they're going to go under and take all of their assets with them. And for newer buildings, the prospect of rent control, I think, discourages the building of new buildings. And for those property owners who do decide to do it, I mean, if you build a new building and you think rent control is going to be coming for you sooner rather than later, what do? You jack up the prices as high as you can, so that instead of being able to pay off the multi-million dollar construction on this building in 20 years, as you normally would, you're going to try to pay it off in 5 years or 6 years because you need to do it before rent control comes for you.
Let me ask you this. How many, I mean, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but you reference that it hasn't worked. How many jurisdictions have tried across the country? Do you have any idea? And what hap, you know, and when you say it doesn't work, do they then reverse it, or what has happened?
Well, I have found I don't know if I can speak to every place, but I've certainly seen it in a lot of places. But rent control is something that I think is political, and I think the politics of it control. And essentially, what everyone does is they would rather kick the can down the road. But there are consequences to that. There are always consequences to that, and there are real-world economic consequences to that as well. I mean, I can say, for example, I do know in New York City, there was one particular bank
Wait,
who did a,
John,
yeah,
let me interrupt you. I want
sure.
to take a commercial break and I want to come back and I want to talk New York City. I know about New York City. My mom married someone who had a rent control apartment. I'll tell you about that.
Oh, they
And
should never give it up.
I'll tell you about that. He tried not to. Then I want to ask you about some ideas the government can do to help reduce the cost for landlords. Maybe they'd be willing to do that. That could balance out. My guest, John Houghton, Senior Attorney, Pacific Legal Foundation. He focuses on property rights and regulatory taking, and that's what we're talking about now. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.